Well, John Rappaport has worked as an investigative reporter for 20 years. He's the author of 5 books, and he's written on medical fraud, deep politics, health issues for newspapers, magazines in the United States and Europe. We turned to John quite a bit to investigate news stories around this planet. His website is nomorefakenews.com. John, how are you? Welcome back.
Very good, George. Good to be here.
Good. You getting ready for the holidays?
Indeed, we are. Having some friends over for Thanksgiving.
Good. Well, in case I forget to give you a happy Thanksgiving at the end of this hour, I'm going to do it now. So I hope everything's okay with you and your family.
Thank you. To you as well.
Why does it appear that this bird flu now with China, that they seem to be so concerned about something that you are not, I am not, and so many other guests who've been on the program are not?
Well, I think that they've basically been bamboozled, scientifically speaking, into going along with the World Health Organization. And that's also a political kind of action. In other words, they've agreed, okay, we'll do whatever the World Health Organization says because we want to be part of the economic community of nations. And, you know, it also allows them, of course, to bring down lots of politically repressive measures on people, and they like that as well over there. So this is yet another opportunity.
Yeah, but here they are. They're vaccinating billions of poultry. This has got to cost a fortune.
Oh yeah, it's unbelievable, completely unbelievable. And you know, in Japan now they are investigating. In fact, the FDA is supposed to be investigating this as well, but they're going to just whitewash it. 2 teenage suicides of kids who took Tamiflu, the main medicine that the United States is preparing to spend about $2 billion on ordering. And these kids killed themselves, obviously. One jumped out of a window, out of an apartment building or off of an apartment building. The other one ran out in front of a car. Well, it turns out, according to Japanese health officials, that in Japan, Tamiflu carries a very serious warning about hallucinations, bizarre behavior, and all of this. And in the United States, we've heard nothing about this, and I looked up the information, the drug information that they print out in the United States. There's only one vague reference to mental confusion. So now they've come up with maybe 12 more cases in Japan of kids that have been, you know, going into some very bizarre behaviors, and they're trying to figure out what's going on, and it's fairly clear that there's a drug connection here to Tamiflu, but they are trying to kind of keep the lid on this and not publicize it too heavily. So this is a fantastic scandal that's coming right in behind the complete scientific hoax about the avian flu itself, that this drug can be quite dangerous.
And beyond the 2 suicides, John, apparently there have been at least 40 cases of psychotic behavior after they took this vaccine.
Yeah, the drug, right. Yeah, it's basically a drug, and it's supposed to work on all kinds of flu. But when you look at the small print, all it says basically is that it would, if you took it within 2 days of first noticing symptoms, it would shorten the period of the flu by between 1.5 and 2.5 days. I mean, that's what all the hullabaloo is about, that, you know, assuming you believe this information, it is, you know, of minimal significance at best, and it has these very dangerous effects on people. Well, it turns out that, of course, Don Rumsfeld, Secretary of Defense, was chairman of Gilead Sciences, the company in the United States that has complete licensing control over Tamiflu.
I think they get like a 10% override from the Roche company forever, right?
That's right. And he still has stock in the company. The estimates are that it's worth between $5 and $25 million. And he, you know, his cash register is ringing as we speak because the stock of the company is going way up as this Tamiflu business becomes universalized. I mean, this is their frontline drug for a disease that, even if you believe the reports, has killed at most 60 people around the world.
How do we know that this disease, John, hasn't been made in some laboratory and has been leaked out, or maybe it did leak out, and therefore officials are a little concerned that it could spread?
Well, I mean, you can never prove, you know, you can't deny that categorically because, of course, you'd have to investigate every single lab in the world. But what I've done is I've gone into the literature and have investigated the way that they are basically testing people to determine if they have this particular H5N1, strain of flu. And the way it turns out is they're basically testing people for antibodies to the virus. In that case, antibodies are a significant sign of health, basically. I mean, that's a sign that the immune system is working. Or they do another test called a PCR, where they take almost, you know, invisible, barely identifiable gene fragments of what they think is a virus. They take those out of the body, and they blow them up hundreds and thousands and who knows how many times in order to get something they can really look at. And then if they think they found this particular virus, they say, aha, well, the person had the virus. But what they fail to understand there is that you need millions and millions and millions of germs in a body to even begin to say that they're contributing to a disease. I mean, millions of the same kind of germ. So that is a ridiculous test that doesn't signify anything. And these are the two frontline tests that they're using to diagnose people that they say have avian flu. So the testing itself is worthless. I mean, there is no evidence anywhere that anybody is dying from some virus called H5N1. It is entirely a story that has been created. And I've never seen personally in my 20 years as an investigative reporter the kind of buildup over nothing that is occurring with this particular thing. I mean, the stories just continue to proliferate. Standard & Poor is doing an analysis of the economic damage that would be caused if, you know, somehow we have 50 million people dying around the world and how many industries would be crippled. We have now about 18 quarantine stations at airports in the United States where people who have certain kinds of symptoms can be taken in and examined. We have new rules that the CDC, Centers for Disease Control, is now about to implement, which means that airlines and boats are going to have to present complete passenger lists and crew lists within 12 hours anytime the CDC asks for them. This program alone for the computer part of it is going to cost them somewhere between $1 billion and $3 billion dollars over the next 10 years. I mean, anywhere you look, this story that is based on a scientific hoax is proliferating in all directions, and it's incredible. I've never seen anything like this in all my years working.
No, either have I. And John, you, I, Dr. Siegel, Leonard Horowitz, we're either very, very right about this or very, very wrong. And I got to tell you, I don't think we're wrong.
No, neither do I. I don't think we're wrong at all. And, you know, all you have to do is look at some of the stories coming out, for example, about Canada. These are typical where they, you know, the headline says bird flu found in Ottawa, wherever, British Columbia. And then you read down into the story and they say, well, of course, this is not the H5N1. This is some other type of H5 bird virus. And this virus has been around forever and birds don't seem to be getting sick from it, which means that they've never gotten sick from it. And so you say, well, why are they publishing the story at all?
Because it's a non-story. It's like in our earlier days in broadcasting, we tried not to broadcast suicides and bomb threats. You know, if somebody called in a threat to a school and they evacuated the school, we never put that on the local news because it would just cater to more wackos to do this. I feel the same thing about this.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, this is exactly the same kind of insanity that just continues to proliferate as more people jump on the bandwagon. And of course, public health agencies all over the world love this because it gives them something to do. I mean, they've got jobs, they've got grant monies, they've got government funding coming in, they can do all kinds of surveillance. And it's conditioning people to accept the idea that we will continue to see these, quote, in heavy quotes, outbreaks like SARS and West Nile and this one. And whenever the government decides that it's time, they can start imposing quarantines. They can start bringing troops out on the streets. They can make people take certain drugs and vaccines with no recourse. And whether it happens in the case of this particular hoax or the next one, it's all a process of cumulative conditioning. That's really what's going on in populations. And it's turning the mentality of the planet into a kind of virtual hospital. I mean, people just keep thinking about disease, disease, disease over and over again, and it becomes a kind of self-fulfilling prophecy instead of thinking about health, health, health.
No, you're right, and it's planet-wide now. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, there's no place on the planet. I mean, I'm sure if you went to Antarctica, there's somebody up there, you know, cracking through some ice looking for H5N1. They're sitting out there in the middle of the winter and somebody gets an idea and they make a phone call. Yeah, sure, take a look. We found it in a penguin. I would bet 50-50 that somewhere down the line somebody's going to say, we found a penguin who's got this virus. So there's nowhere you can go on the planet where the story is not making major headlines.
What happened to the scare of the last 2 years, SARS, which, again, on this program, we talked about the fact that it was going to be a non-issue. It was not. But what happened to it?
Right. It's just, you know, well, that was the last scare that we promoted. So that's old now. We have to find a new one.
It's not newsworthy anymore.
Exactly. And so it literally disappears because it never was really there in the first place. I mean, if you believe the diagnoses, which I don't, you would say 775 people died globally during the, quote, SARS crisis. And I mean, that is, you know, more people are killed by
stubbing their toe, John.
Stubbing their toe, light bulbs falling out of street lamps magically at night than that. And so it's quite easy to make it disappear because it was a non-story to begin with. And the same thing with this, only the promotion on this, the PR, the propaganda, exceeds anything that SARS produced. I mean, this is just unimaginable. And I have found more and more conventional-minded scientists stepping out of the woodwork and saying, this is ridiculous.
Well, and here's my analogy too, Jen. I don't agree with these figures, either do you, but the CDC reports 36,000 people die in this country every year because of the flu. And again, I think that's inflated. But let's use that number because that's their number. 36,000 people die every year from the normal flu. If 36,000 people died from the so-called avian flu, they'd shut down the planet.
That's right. They would shut down the planet completely. And yet, as you say, they present this 36,000 number for, quote, regular flu as a normal every year occurrence. And they, you know, don't see any contradiction, and nobody else bothers to point out the contradiction except people like you and me, and everybody goes their merry way. So, I mean, the insanity of this is so hard to wrap your mind around for the average person that he begins to think, well, it must be true. I mean, I may not have believed it a year ago or 6 months ago, but now the stories are coming so fast and thick that I just have to accept it as being, you know, a very great danger because everybody says it is. And that is when propaganda really flourishes, when people hear it from 16 different sources, and they cave in and say, okay, well, I guess it must be so.
You going to stick around for some phone calls, John?
Sure.
We'll do that. And also, I'm going to ask you when we come back, why Asia? Why the Hong Kong flu? Why the Asian flu? Why does it always seem to happen there? We'll be back in a moment. We'll take your phone calls. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with John Rappaport, our guest, and your phone calls for the rest of this hour. John, why Asia? Why do all these diseases seem to occur there?
Well, the short answer is they don't. But that is that's part of the...
In that case, give me the long answer.
Yeah, that's part of the legend. I mean, you can have diseases of different kinds occurring any place, but you focus on those, you know, coming out of the mysterious East and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, I've done whole routines on the Brooklyn flu and how come we don't have people in China saying that, you know, nobody from Brooklyn is allowed to travel to Hong Kong. And there is no reason. There is no good reason, because it's just a matter of where these health agencies are taking their focus. I mean, you could, if you wanted to, you could go to O'Hare Airport in Chicago, and you would be able to test people for some kinds of germs, and you could find one you hadn't seen before, and you could probably trace it back to a slaughterhouse, and you could say, wow, these people shouldn't be allowed to fly to, Africa.
Look at how ridiculous this is getting, John. Japan has asked travelers from bird flu-affected areas to have their shoes disinfected upon arrival at their four major airports.
Wow. And I'm just looking at an article here. How do you like this paragraph for a non sequitur? The United States, Japan, Taiwan, and Hong Kong have temporarily banned Canadian poultry imports after the discovery of a duck carrying a non-lethal bird flu virus. This is not even the one that they're talking about.
It's not even lethal, and it's one duck.
Yeah. So now one duck is responsible for, you know, putting a whole bunch of Canadian farms out of business temporarily.
This is crazy. Let's go to some calls. Wildcard Line, welcome to Coast. You are on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, Joe. Where are you calling from?
Hey.
Okay.
I have a question. Prior to this bird flu scare, wasn't Congress and the president in a great big debate, and really the whole country, over this little thing called Postal Security? I think it's pretty evident that something's going on, that nothing was ever resolved, and now all of a sudden the bird flu. I haven't heard anything about it since then.
You know, I think you could probably find 15 or 20 major news stories that have been completely lost, slipped through the cracks, as a result of this whole hysteria about bird flu. And you're absolutely right. I mean, people in the government are always looking for ways of diverting people's attention from issues about which they are very uncomfortable because, you know, they're hiding lies or crimes or whatever. And when they fasten onto one of these, they put the PR machine to use and start turning it out. Just like people used to do on little mimeograph machines, it just comes spilling right out there. And the bird flu makes a great cover story, hiding, obscuring all kinds of things going on in the world, and certainly Social Security would be one of those things. You're absolutely right.
All right, let's go west of the Rockies. Your turn. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there. Hello. Yeah.
This is James here in Idaho.
Hi, James. Go ahead.
Yeah. John and George are doing a good show.
Thank you.
I was wondering if you remember the swine flu fever thing back in the 70s?
Yeah, I sure do.
Yeah, well, I got to tell you, my mother, you know, there was a couple investigative reporters like yourself that were revealing that this wasn't such a big deal. And there was only one guy at the time that had died from it, and he must have had a weak system or something. But anyway, my mother was all worried about getting this shot. No, and I told her, don't do it, because, you know, it's all hyped up and everything else. Anyway, she went and got the shot, and 5 days later she had a stroke.
Wow.
And I think a lot of other people did that, or had that sort of an effect, or after effect, you might say. But anyway, there was a class action lawsuit against the government, I guess, over the whole thing. And I don't remember how that turned out. She didn't get in on it, but I just kind of was wondering and kind of warning people that they might have a bad reaction to these shots they want to push on us, too.
Sure. So, with the swine flu, as I recall, The vaccine killed about 100 people that they knew about. So you can easily multiply that by between, say, 10 and 100. And hundreds of people, maybe more, got very, very sick from the vaccine. And they stopped the whole thing and just forgot about it.
John, would you eat any of this chicken in China that has been vaccinated? I wouldn't.
No, I would not. I definitely would not because, you know, there's no way to know what's in that vaccine. Certainly we know that they put germs in there intentionally, but then there are other things in these vaccines like heavy metals, aluminum, sometimes mercury, formaldehyde, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, I mean, that's what I would be worried about. I wouldn't be worried about some H5N1. But no, no, I wouldn't eat animals that I knew had that particular vaccine, and I would not eat, I would not take vaccines for that same reason because, you know, they say, well, this is fine, we know it's great, and then if you happen to be one of those people who has a severe adverse reaction, then you find out 10 years later, oh, yes, there was this thing that, but, you know, too late then.
You know, with all this that's been going on, who's to say that the vaccinations of any animal, swine, beef, has had some effect on all of us, John? Who knows?
Absolutely. You know, I was thinking about that just as I said that. I mean, because there's so many other vaccines. And then on top of that, of course, you have all the antibiotics that are just flung around in gigantic amounts in these factory farms where the animals are raised because of the horrendous overcrowding conditions, which means that animals are getting sick all the time. And as I've mentioned on previous shows that we've done on this, animal epidemics sweep through, animal farms of all kinds all the time. You can go back and look at the records in recent years and distant years. Public health agencies are always sending out memos, this epidemic, that epidemic, you're killing these number of birds or those number of cows. And it's all about the conditions under which these animals are raised. It has nothing to do, it's not that these germs are virulent, it's just that you take any living being of any kind, put him or her into a filthy, overcrowded condition, and illness prevails.
You know, our young people are growing so quickly and so fast. I'm convinced it's the hormones that they put through the food chain.
Yeah, I mean, growth hormones in particular would be that kids are arriving at puberty much too soon, all of that kind of thing. And then you have kids who are drinking these insane drinks that are just packed with stimulants, which has to speed up the metabolism, and who knows what effects those are having in the same regard.
Let's go
to
our first.
It's crazy.
First time caller line, you're on with John Rappaport on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Good evening, gentlemen. Hello?
Yeah. Hi. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a theory that it's possible that the United States, in an attempt to preempt the whole end times, if the government knows that end times are around the corner, the remaining factions are the red communists, the Muslim states, and then the West. And if you're trying to cut out their food source, what better way than to introduce a fatal virus that would take out the birds, which would then increase the bug population and swarm the rice paddies. And I think the risk of human transmission was calculated in the lab, and that scares them.
A conspiracy, John?
Anyway.
Well, here's how I would look at this. You know, I wouldn't comment on the end times, but I would say that these hoax diseases are all generated in part because economic warfare is involved. And when you look at the impact of SARS, and by the way, SARS caused more economic damage than all of the propaganda about avian flu has so far. And one of the reasons, of course, was the travel ban that was put on Toronto. These are also strategies for economic warfare between various groups that are trying to gain a competitive advantage over one another. And when you look at all the birds that have been slaughtered, when you look at farms that have gone out of business, when you look at any hesitation on the part of people to travel to certain parts of the world, the tourism industry and so on, you see that all it takes is scare stories. Doesn't have to be any fact involved at all, and you get immediate economic damage.
Want to kill Chinese trade, John? Just say that the virus has an ability not only to transmit itself through a bird, but jumps on clothes, shoes, linen, and is everywhere. So all these imports we get from China could be contaminated.
Sure, that's all you'd have to do. And, you know, exactly. And fact would have nothing to do with it. It would just be...
Just say it.
You just say it. You get it into the press. There are, you know, PR specialists who can do that for you. And right away, you know, you kill off a dozen industries overnight. It's really very easy in the world we live in to do that. And people have to recognize that this is a tool for... this kind of economic warfare, announcing a disease that does not really exist, giving it a name, making people frightened, and right away you are waging economic warfare. I mean, the areas of China that were most affected by SARS, and when I say affected, I mean economically affected, were areas that were budding sort of free zones of private enterprise that were being encouraged by the mainland Chinese government.
Is this wag the dog all over again?
Yeah, it is exactly wag the dog. It's cooking up a scenario. By the way, I just saw the movie the other night for about the fourth time, and it got even better.
It does.
I mean, what story can we invent that will create the desired effect? And then when we find that story, the only question is, how do we float it? How do we get people to buy the story?
Right, and how do we exploit it?
That's right, and that's what's going on with avian flu.
Yeah, but we got a problem. We got this Rappaport guy and this Nori guy and these other people who don't believe us.
I guess we have to be further conditioned. We've escaped somehow from the operant conditioning, right?
International Line, where are you calling from? You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Murray.
Hi, Murray. Where might you be?
Oh, I'm near Chilliwack, where the bird flu broke loose in Canada here.
Uh-huh.
And the one bird that's causing international problems.
Fewer.
The one bird.
The one mallard duck.
The dead duck, man.
Well, anyway, enough joking around. I just had a brief question. Is that, it's starting all over in Asia here. But we're pretty scared because 90% of the people here in Vancouver depend on chicken and pizza. Does that mean that there's going to be, like, a big suspension on the chicken and we're not going to be... Are we prepared for this pandemic that's going to hit us?
You mean, well, the pandemic that's going to hit you is the pandemic of not eating chicken. It's not going to have anything to do with something different or new or scary. It's going to have to do with import bans or export bans. I mean, there is no telling what a government might do. You heard that clip I think I just read from the article where you have nations in Asia now banning the importation of all poultry from Canada. Well, what would happen if Canada decided internally to limit the shipping of poultry from one place to another because they were afraid of, you know, contamination or illness? Then people in Vancouver might very well be, having to find something else to eat. Anything could spiral out of this. And it would all be in the – and this is what people really have to understand. It's all in the service of promoting the propaganda story and scaring people and making them believe that it's true. And what better way to do that than to say to people, you can't eat so-and-so until we tell you it's okay. I mean, that works pretty good.
I'm in St. Louis for the holidays, John, and today I saw more chemtrails than I have seen in any city in all my life.
Is that right?
I mean, this sky was packed with zigzags and lines and everything else. And I'm looking at this going, just what the heck is going on?
Well, I'll tell you, I posted a piece on chemtrails the other day, and it was written by somebody else, and I think William Thomas. And before the article, I said, think about this. Doesn't the whole idea of these viral epidemics make a terrific cover story to explain what is happening to people as a result of chemtrails? Because people come in with respiratory symptoms. There's people all over San Diego right now that have respiratory symptoms, including me, from no particular reason that I can figure out at all. The other day I walked outside. It was a gorgeous day, and I thought, wow, the air is really clear. And I looked over at one corner of the sky, and there was obviously a very long chemtrail sitting right there that was taking a very long time to dissolve. And so, you know, those people are not stupid who put the whole chemtrail program together. And they say, well, you know, we need an explanation for why people are getting sick. What can we do? Well, how about some new respiratory diseases?
Exactly.
SARS is a respiratory. Bird flu, respiratory. And they just go with that, and they promote these hoaxes, and they start diagnosing people. But, I mean, what hospital in the world is diagnosing people for chemtrail damage? Zero.
You know what's so scary, John, is the more and more we get into these kinds of stories, the more tremendous distrust we have for other people. And that's sad, but it's true.
Yeah, it is sad. You know, everybody's raised as a kid to believe in loyalty to the government and that this is a good thing, and everybody wants to feel that great feeling that loyalty inspires. And then as you get older and you begin to look into this stuff and you find out that's not really the case, it is disillusioning. But in the long run, I think that it has an invigorating component, let's put it that way, when you finally begin to confirm what you've seen for a long time, that something's wrong out there, and you begin to see what it is.
Thanks a lot. NoMoreFakeNews.com. John Rappaport.